to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink, who once again has been on time.
All time.
Ever since she got married. Aaron, what did you do to this woman?
You see all good marriages for you?
I guess. It's making me nervous.
So I want to ask Aaron, because she might say something else.
it's making me nervous because I'm getting married this week.
You are?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, it might Thursday. Make you late.
That's what I'm worried about, because Brian is my Patty.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly telling him, yes, that is the time we have to be there, but you're forgetting the time we have to drive.
Right. So we have to ask. So you and Aaron obviously go to a lot of the events. Do you all still drive separate now?
Well, it depends on when the event is. If it's right after work, of course she's coming from a different location than me. So we go differently. But we've gotten tickets to stuff at the Windspear and City Performance Hall and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've been starting doing the train. I take the train down and meet her. And we go to dinner, and then we go to the event. And then I drive home with her.
Obviously, yeah.
Oh, you know? Cool.
So,
cool.
Yeah, okay. It's really, it has improved since we got married, actually.
I always used to think it was kind of funny how even when Aaron did the show, you all would still drive separately to the show. See, every once in a while, you all would ride together.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in news this week, we're waiting for our guest to come, and hopefully she will be here, but we have lots to talk about. Your school, Patty, one of the most liberal institutions in the country, the president of your school is out.
Well, yeah, but not enough out.
Patty is a Baylor alum, although I'm not sure she can say that. She can't say she's a gay Baylor alum because they might sue you.
That's right.
Again.
I am a gay Baylor alum.
Okay, so Ken Starr, who prosecuted Bill Clinton through impeachment because he had sex with Monica Lewinsky, when he became president of Baylor, they started having a real bad series of rapes on campus. And because he's so concerned about sexual misconduct, he went after these people, didn't he?
No.
Oh, okay, what happened?
Well, first of all, when he was going after Clinton, it was the Whitewater thing that they spent millions of tax dollars on, found nothing, and they just kept digging and digging, and then they finally found this, the Monica Lewinsky thing, and that's what they went forward with.
And so he learned his lesson, and he's no longer wasting public money or school money to pursue things that are have
no value.
Right.
So after doggedly digging on Clinton, he says about the rapes at Baylor that there was little he could do.
As the president.
He was the president and chancellor.
And there was little he could do. So
you think they might have been able to do something more like what?
Like report it to the police to
right.
to comply with Title IX rulings, to answer emails from victims who write to him. There are tons of things. But
so one of the news stations in Waco interviewed him. It was really an odd interview.
It was so bizarre.
Okay, so explain what happened there.
Well, first of all, the Board of Regents, who are the Board of Regents for the University of Texas system, are appointed by the governor, but the Baylor's a private university in Waco. Yeah. And so their Board of Regents did an investigation and decided to fire the football coach. And they've also demoted Ken Starr from president to just chancellor. But a lot of people don't realize that he teaches law at Baylor School of Law.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still, now that he's out as chancellor, that he's resigned from that, he's still in a classroom with students, potentially students who've been raped.
So he teaches law. Is there anything in the law that says that rape's illegal?
That's exactly the point, is that this man should be disbarred. He ignored the law in a position of authority to do something where he was compelled under the law to act, and he did nothing.
Okay, so he was interviewed by one of the Waco TV stations, and they did several takes. Now, it's not uncommon to do several takes, even for the news. You know, when somebody is giving a statement and they just say to the reporter, oh, that I'm not saying that right, or could we do that again? Normally a reporter will let you do it again because we're not looking – it's not gotcha. it's really, I want you to say what you're trying to say. And I've seen that lots and lots and lots of times. The reporter says it wrong. The person he's interviewing is, you know, and just gets nervous and wants to do it a second time. Because you get nervous on camera if you're not used to doing that.
The reporters generally want, unless they want the interview to be the story, they want the soundbite to be
right.
So know, what they're looking for.
So Mary Spaeth, who's a public relations person from here in Dallas, she's working with Ken Starr and has worked with him all along. She worked in the Bush White House, and she worked with Ken Starr during Watergate. So she's worked with
and
him.
Whitewater.
Whitewater, not Watergate. And so she's worked with him for years. And she just jumped right into the interview. Now, that's different than letting somebody restate something or, you know, or that's not what I was trying to say. And you just say it. What did she do?
He answered a question from the reporter asking about a specific email from a specific victim who personally emailed him personally as president of the university and copied gobs and gobs of other people. She copied the Title IX officer at Baylor University.
Good for her.
She copied, like, you know, other officials. And so she asked him about this specific email, and he proceeded to say, you know, well, I get lots of emails. And he basically said that he didn't, you know, he may not have seen that one. He may have seen it. He may not have seen it.
So he never replied.
No, she didn't get a reply for 6 days. After sending that email, and it wasn't from him. So, you know, and she was complaining about her complaint was a crime. It was a rape on campus at Baylor.
You know,
and so Mary Spaeth interrupts everything and says, "We got to stop this right now. I need to speak to my client." Mm-hmm. And he just acted like an oblivious teenager who had never been in front of the camera, wasn't a lawyer. It's like, oh my gosh, what's so wrong? You know, did I say it wrong?
And then he says, comes back on camera, and he says,
I have no recollection of that email. Mm-hmm. But the TV station in Waco, to their credit, played both.
Well, because this wasn't an example of somebody trying to, you know, I didn't get out what I'm trying to say. He completely changed his story.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and this is the guy who is supposed to be, you know, this. You know, forthright, badass, special prosecutor.
Right.
And he's just acting like a doddering grandfather, you know, like he doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. He's just so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the hypocrisy is just, it just crawls all over me. But what really pisses me off is that he's still there.
Well, he was fired as president. But he remained as chancellor.
And then he resigned.
He resigned as chancellor. Because then he could
speak about it, he said.
He could speak more openly. And that was part of why they played both – actually, it was more than two versions. It was like three versions of what he had to say. And they played the multiple versions because, you know, I want to speak more forthrightly. Okay, and your handler and publicist is telling you to say what now?
Right.
So that you can – you know, in your speaking more forthrightly – you know, it was ridiculous. But he, like you said, he's still in a classroom teaching law students.
Yep. He's still out there having done nothing.
Are charges pending against him in front of the bar?
I think he should be disbarred. And I haven't talked to people who are in the know about how to go about doing that. But I think we need to make every effort, certainly as alum, and alum women, to get him disbarred. He ignored the law. Mm-hmm. He ignored the law. And the Board of Regents, I don't know what they gained by keeping him on. He's ineffectual. They know that. He was ineffectual as president. He was ineffectual as chancellor in dealing with all of this stuff. But I get the impression from the Board of Regents they don't care. They just don't care because women have always been at the bottom of their concerns. Always. And so they've just underscored it again.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, women don't matter at Baylor. It's the boys who play football.
Right.
That's what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And so they're keeping this guy on as a law professor who, you know, spit at the law there on campus in front of everybody.
From Ken, do we know anything about the victims and
how their cases have progressed with the law, with the men who, you know, they're accusing?
A number of them have their rapists have been convicted in court.
Good.
And in fact, one of them is up for 20 years in prison.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah,
and there are cases. It's not one person who did several. It's a number of cases over the last 5 years or so. How long has Ken Starr been president there?
Oh, quite a number of years. I would say
at least 5 years that he's been there. But since he's come, and that's not to say that there were never rapes before that. That's not to say that he's the cause of the rapes at all. But he hasn't, as president, done the most important job that a president of a school can do, and that's take care of the safety of his students on campus.
Right.
And that's what's criminal about it.
It's criminal. He sat on this, and if this were not a university situation and someone went forward to a police department and said, I was raped, and they did nothing, then no investigation, no pursuit, that would be big news in a community.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know that the police are ignoring more than one woman, you know, whole bunches of women who have reported rapes. They're just not doing anything. They're not even investigating. They're not anything. That would be outrageous, and somebody would be charged with a crime.
Mm-hmm.
But at Baylor,
one would think.
You know, it's so disgusting to me that he's been sitting on this, and if it hadn't been for the women speaking up and the media pursuing it, he would have kept this secret for eons.
Yeah, and that's what actually has gotten it to the police. It's victims going to the media, isn't it?
Yep.
In some of the cases. And media normally will protect the identity of somebody who's claiming to be a victim in a crime. I did that this week in Dallas Voice for one of our victims that one of the local stations didn't particularly protect, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But so where do you, as a Baylor alum, you have a stake in this, as a Baylor alum who's been sued by the university for using gay Baylor?
Well, not me personally, I mean the group. That was,
your group.
Got the cease and desist letter for calling ourselves Baylor Bear Pride, or you know, Baylor University Gay and Lesbian Alumni.
That was a while back. Does that still hold
that's
up?
Been a very
it's
long
20
time.
Years or so.
Yeah.
But so that has nothing to do with Ken Starr, but Baylor Bear Pride, whose mission was to raise money for the school.
Just, you know, we never got far enough to even firmly decide that. We were just.
But that's normally what an alumni group, that's one of the goals of the alumni group, keep in touch. And
you want the university where you got your degree to continue to be successful. That's what's
right.
That's what makes your degree
valuable.
Continue to be valuable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's like we have in my school, we have a gay and lesbian or an LGBT alumni group, and I'm constantly getting fundraising letters through the gay and lesbian alumni group because that's what alumni groups do.
And you can move around the country and they will find you.
Oh, they will.
They will absolutely
they will.
Find you.
I have moved 3 times since I graduated from college, and I don't recall not once sending them a change of address letter, but they find me. I get those fundraising letters.
Can you give just $25?
like, how did y'all find me?
Your school will let you give just $25?
No, it's like if you...
Not
if
mine.
You talk about like, they want $500,
$1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Last time you gave this many $100, can we double that this time?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
have a new capital campaign going on for a new whatever. We need to double that. We're trying to do some, I forgot what their research is in. Nanotechnology is what my school has gotten into. I don't even know what it is. And they're trying to sell me on, I need to help fund the Nanotechnology Center, which is the biggest one apparently in the country. It's like, yeah, because nano means tiny, tiny. It doesn't take a lot to be the biggest of something that's, you know, this big.
So you weren't in that department, were you?
No, I was English. English major, worked on the school newspaper, and extracurricular activities, as you can imagine. Anyway, you know, I don't know if our guest is going to be showing up today or not, and that's okay. We haven't had a chance to talk in a while. We're just talking about Ken Starr, who's the former president of Patty's School. We'll take our break just a minute or so early, but you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who, as noted, has been the on-time Patty Fink ever since her marriage, and Laurent Landis. And I'm just kind of babbling today because, do you know what people keep asking me?
What?
And they need to stop. I'm getting married Thursday night on stage at the Turtle Creek Chorale concert. If you haven't gotten your tickets, anybody can get tickets. We still have tickets left, plenty of them. And we have cake for our 950 guests, our 900
closest friends.
Our 950 closest friends, and that includes people in our listening audience. So come have a piece of cake. The cake will be served after the ceremony. People keep asking me, are you nervous? Are you nervous? Well, I wasn't.
You're kind of making me nervous.
Yeah, and poor Brian, who isn't the type of person who goes on air every week, you're making him nervous, so stop it. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
I'm Michael Dominguez, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly, 89.3 KNON FM.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Josh is on the board. Doc is standing outside still in the heat waiting for our guest. Somebody just drove into the drove out. That's what I love about our new studio. We have like this panoramic view that we've never had before. You can see three ways around the studio. But that is one thing I do love about this new studio that we have. Week before, somebody else was attacked in Oak Lawn. Channel 4 showed up while the police and paramedics were still treating him. And the way it was reported was he was punched in – somebody ran out of the car. He was punched in the eye. They ran back in the car and drove off. Now, he contacted me this week, and he said, I don't know what I said to them. I was – lapsing in and out of consciousness, but here's what I remember, and here's what he remembers. He remembers somebody hitting him from behind. Does that sound familiar? That's the way Michael Dominguez and a number of other people.
That's the way a lot of people get mugged.
Yeah.
Gosh, well, should I hit him in the front or in the back?
Well,
in the back.
You hit him from the back of the head so that he can't see is unconscious. But again, no robbery, nothing missing. But in his case, his foot was badly damaged. And the way the doctors described it, it was, no, it wasn't. He thought he just fell. And he said, no, that's not consistent with just falling. It's consistent with somebody either stomping on your foot or hitting you in the foot. So he was badly injured. He asked not for his name not to be used. And, you know, I said when we were talking about Ken Starr, were any of the victims identified, and it would be normal not to if they don't want to be identified. He didn't want to be identified because when he was attacked, Channel 4 was there in front of his apartment, and he said, okay, they know where I live. They don't need to know my name, too.
Right.
So I did not use his name. And that's normally the way media would handle something like that, and it's okay not to use the person's name. Now, normally we don't do that on the radio here, because if somebody's talking, but we have had cases where somebody was younger and we just used a first name, like when Youth First was on. We've done that by, you know, somewhat protecting their identity. But anyway, you went to speak to Chief Brown this week, didn't you, Patty?
Yes, I was in on that.
Tell us about what happened when you went to speak to Chief Brown.
Originally he wanted to speak to those who had representatives from the organizations who had done press releases criticizing his attendance at not just an event at First Baptist Church, but also a press conference afterward. And there was, you know, there's legitimate concern there because, as we know, First Baptist Church in Dallas is led by Reverend Jeffress, who, you know, just as he hasn't endorsed Donald Trump, you know, he says he loves, you know, gay people and he's not against us or trans people. Mm-hmm. But he's certainly over the years and very recently included bashed us verbally. You know, most recently was that businesses who support transgender members of the community are worse than ISIS.
Mm-hmm. Because wow. those businesses, by letting somebody go to the bathroom
in their own private bathroom,
that it's theirs, mm-hmm. right? I mean, like here at KNON, the bathroom down the hall is KNON's bathroom, right?
Right. right.
And we let everybody use the bathroom, right?
Right.
Okay. So, that's the same thing as beheading people for who they are.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's exactly the same thing, isn't it?
Right.
It's the same thing as taking people as human shields to protect yourself from getting bombed, right? That's the same thing.
Yeah. That's.
I just want to make sure that we understand what it is that this man is even saying. What he's saying is so insane.
It's nuts.
Now, before you go on about that, I want to talk about Jeffress for a minute. Here's what I think he's doing. I think we, the gay and lesbian and transgender community, have done a good enough job of talking to media and saying, every time there's a religion story, you don't have to run to First Baptist Church and ask Pastor Jeffress what he thinks of it. Here's an example. When Jack and George, who had been together 55 years, mm-hmm. When they got married in a ceremony at Midway Hills Christian Church and their members of North Haven United Methodist Church, when they got married, Channel 11 went to Jeffress and asked his opinion. The pastor at North Haven was furious. The pastor mm-hmm. at Midway Hills was furious because this wasn't a Baptist issue.
Right.
This was a Methodist and Disciples of Christ issue. Period.
Even if it was a Baptist church, it wasn't his church.
So you asked the pastor
Did you run around asking everybody's opinion on every different...
But I could see if there's something controversial that one Southern Baptist church did, and you go to him to explain. He's a spokesperson that you understand. If it's within the same denomination, I get that. It's a different religion, and you're asking him what he thinks of what this other church is doing?
It would be no different than having, you know, I would hope that we're past this, but, you know, having a story about African Americans in some way and then going to someone in the Klan, Ku Klux Klan, to get their opinion about whatever the story was.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane to do that. I would hope that we're beyond that. I can remember days when there was never a story that didn't have a Jeffress type response about us. And any form of media.
Do you know one thing that stopped that one time with the Dallas Morning News? It was back in the 90s. There were a number of stories about the gay community one particular Sunday. And the newspaper took a lot of hell for that. But one of the stories in particular was about a group of people in the gay and lesbian community that went to South Dallas to repair the home of an elderly blind woman. And they went to First Baptist to ask their opinion. What opinion? There's no opinion on this. It's something that some people did. You either choose to cover what they did or not.
Right.
There was nothing political about it. There was. I mean, what the gay community was trying to show at the time was, you know what, we're members of the community too, mm-hmm. and we care about this person enough that her house needs painting, there are some things that need to be repaired, and she's elderly and she's blind, and we're going to do that.
And our community's still doing stuff like that. Every day, every week.
Yep.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. But when I mentioned that to one of the editors of the paper, he got it. He said, yeah, that's really not one of those opinion things. There was no issue.
Yeah.
There was no issue. We're helping somebody. I'm saying if he's against what we did, then he thinks that she didn't need her house painted or repairs made to the house? Or is he saying that his church should have done it? They didn't. Why isn't that being reported? You know, why aren't you reporting?
If you're going to go include them in this story. Then
if you're including them.
They didn't do anything. We did.
Right.
Yeah. So slowly media is getting it. And if you've noticed, you've seen him on air less and less and less, right? He won't come on our show. I've invited, but he won't come on our show.
I think we should continue to invite him.
Yeah, of course we will. I think media has gotten it that every time something happens, that a synagogue does this and church does it, you don't need to run to him for his opinion on it. Every time there's an issue like transgender, whatever, you don't have to run to him. But one way that you can get attention is by saying stupid things. Donald Trump proved that.
And he you know, doesn't endorse, but he's, you know, 99.9%, 100% supports him.
That's one way he's gotten attention nationally, by standing next to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great that you can stand next to Donald Trump? You get your picture on TV. You can say stupid things. Businesses that support trans people are the same thing as ISIS. Stupid statement. I haven't seen any analysis of just how stupid that statement is. When he made that statement, why don't they go to a religious leader elsewhere? And that was one of the things I said after George and Jack's wedding to this Channel 11 reporter. I said, you know, the next time First Baptist does something, you owe Eric a visit. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, Eric Folkearth at North Haven, somebody in his church is getting married. You went to Jeffress for an opinion. Next time Jeffress does something, you need to go to Eric for an opinion. Mm-hmm. And but she didn't understand it. It went right over her head.
Of course it did.
Right over her
head. But, you know, I think this goes deeper than just how the media covers and how they choose to cover a story as far as the opinion thing. I think it goes back to, like, before there was nationwide marriage equality, when I forgot who the individual was, but went around knocking on doors asking straight people, you know, would you, is it okay if I get married? Or just getting their opinion, and they had this kind of, like, strange look, you know. If you're going to cover somebody's story, I mean, marriage, just cover it. We don't need the opinion of anybody else.
It's not an opinion. There's no opinion.
There's no opinion.
Because all you're saying is that this is somehow worthy of someone else's judgment.
Exactly.
And it's just not.
It's
not.
There
are lots of things in life that don't require the judgment of others in order to make it a valid story. You know?
Or just a valid marriage. That's the whole crux of the issue is, like, you know, we don't, why are we putting it up for a popular vote, you know, to whether I can get married or not? So I think that's at the basis.
But we met with him this week.
So Patty, you and a group of about five or six people.
Right. There was CC Cox and Raphael McDonald
from Resource Center. Tony Vetta from the LGBT Chamber.
He specifically mentioned, and Jeffress specifically mentioned Chambers of Commerce in his statement about ISIS. And then Jane Airy from Stonewall Democrats, who was a recent guest on our show, and Cannon Brown from Take Back Oak Lawn and from Young Stonewall Democrats. And there was a large contingent from the Dallas Police Department there, along with Chief Brown.
So what was the concern about the press conference that...
Well, the press conference was one thing, but one of the things that Jeffress had offered on behalf of his church was that it wasn't just an appreciate, you know, the Dallas Police Department Day.
Which would have been completely appropriate for the police chief to go. He represents everybody in the city, so that was appropriate, yes?
Yes, and so... But, you know, the First Baptist Church via Jeffress has offered, you know, Christian counseling to any police officers who are obviously, you know, all police officers are stressed on the job. It's a stressful job.
Yeah.
And offered free counseling and also scholarships for their kids to go to First Baptist Church's summer camp. But I think it was really the press conference that was of most concern, because he stood there next to this man and said nothing to refute anything he had ever said. And he had attacked not just us, but he's attacked people of the Muslim faith, people of the Jewish faith, people who are not like him. And so we kind of called him out on it, you know, and I'd say we did call him out on it. That was inappropriate. He goes, well, we don't endorse or condemn. And he did concede that he should have said that. He could have, at that press conference, said, we neither endorse nor condemn anything that Reverend Jeffress has ever said, or First Baptist Church, whatever. And he agreed to put out a statement to that effect.
Was part of it just kind of...
And there were some other things.
I'm here. I'm their guest. I'm just trying to be polite. Because I don't get any bad vibes from Chief Brown. I don't feel that he has... I don't think he has a malicious bone in his body particularly. I really don't. I think one of his strengths is that he really does believe he represents everybody. He's here to protect everybody.
And he is under. I mean, he talked about that. Now his schedule is, you know, chock full of events that he does for every kind of individual and group in the city, mm-hmm. and as well he should.
Well, if you're able to get him to concede to that, I think you all did your job.
And it's, you know, there were some other things discussed as well that would be helpful, certainly with you know, the things going on in Oakland and all mm-hmm. these attacks. And, you know, they went to great effort, as they often do at the task force meetings. But they went through what their, you know, their strategy and outcomes for you know, dealing with those attacks as well, mm-hmm. which I feel like is on track, mm-hmm. you know.
There's still, and this is one thing that I keep hearing, but why haven't there been any arrests?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, none of the perpetrated, reported perpetrators, I mean, they're all over the map in terms of descriptions. Many of the attacks have no description.
Because I was about to say, most of them don't even have a description.
Because they didn't see them, or
right.
they were not capable of seeing them when they were attacked.
Right.
You know, because they were intoxicated or you know, hit in such a way that they didn't see
right.
them.
Like Michael was hit from behind.
Well,
right.
Didn't see a thing.
That's the thing. So was Blake. So was Tito. So was Jeffrey. I mean, this has been repeated that at least of the 18 that they're saying were reported attacks, at least 7 or 8 of them, it was – some of them described it as a baseball bat. And this guy last week, he said, I didn't see what it was. I said, could it have been a baseball bat? He said, yeah, it was either something, you know, a wooden bat, or it was a metal object, a metal bar that struck me across. But one thing that was confirmed by Parkland Hospital, by the doctors that gave him the MRI, was that he said, you couldn't have gotten that from being punched in the face. You were struck in the head by some hard, rigid object. In order to do that. And, I mean, Blake, who was the first victim, and he wasn't really the first because there were one or two before that we didn't hear about until afterwards, but Blake was the one who was attacked on parade day and kidnapped, actually, and he's the only one who was kidnapped.
Blake wasn't just a hit and run. It was like pulled into
a car and
pummeled by, yeah. I think he said, at least 5 guys.
And he said 4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, he was seeing stars, even though they were right there around him in the car, and the adrenaline was going in save-your-life mode. He didn't have a description of them because all he was seeing was stars.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what happens when you're hit right here above the eye or next to the eye, and that bone is broken. So, one of the things, this guy had a funny story. He said, and some of the timeline that he gave me, he said, I'm reconstructing this from texts that I was doing. He said, I don't remember doing them, but a police officer took him down to headquarters to talk to a detective. And so he texted that he was hit in the head on the street and now he's going to jail. And the police officer kept saying, no, you're not going to jail. We're just taking you to police headquarters to talk to some officers. But he said that several times. That's how out of it he was.
Right,
he wasn't understanding that they were treating him as the victim of a crime, not mm-hmm. and the survivor of a crime, not somebody who they're suspecting of causing this. But that's how out of it he was. And unfortunately, that's what went on the news originally when he was in that condition. So.
As any of the officials or any statements been released from the Dallas Police Department, did they think this is one or two people? Just from their, you know, investigative skills, do they think there's one or two people who are committing these crimes?
What did Chief Brown say about it to your group?
Or many?
Well, they had some high-ranking officials there who were, you know, going through. They have the lead over assaults, the lead over robberies. They went through, and it's clear that, I mean, there's no discernible distinctive pattern among them that you know, combined suspect descriptions and all of that, that leads to, it's not, they basically said there is no serial attacker. These are...
And the reason why I asked that...
There's no evidence based on what they've...
With the way they're being attacked from behind and
David, thousands of people. Crimes happen.
Right.
You either see them or you don't. They're going to probably do something where you can't see them.
But this is one thing that a police officer said to me is a possibility that they were looking into, that there's one person who's consistent, who is working with several other people, which is why it's sometimes two, sometimes three, in Blake's case, maybe four, and that's a possibility.
Sure, it's a possibility. Well, they don't have any evidence
that
leads them, no definitive leads, that they can go, let's go here and interview this person. They don't have any of that because the victims are not able to give them that kind of information.
Right.
And, you know, they don't have any other – they've looked at footage of security cameras all over the place. They're trying to find, you know, but they need help and get in developing leads for these crimes. And but what they have doesn't indicate that it's one person doing them all. That's not the case. Some of them are white. Some of them are black.
Right.
Some of them are brown. Some of them are some of them are unknown. We don't know. You know, so
right. Well, I get
no
right. I know. There's definitely no leads as far as a suspect.
Right.
But what made me think it might be just one or two people is because the one thing that I keep hearing over and over is that nobody was robbed.
Yeah, there are several things like that that seem to be consistent. There might be...
I don't think that's the case for all 18 cases.
Not all
though.
18, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Tito was robbed.
Okay.
That
was the November 1st attack. Yeah, there have been several robberies. In a couple of cases, they took a phone and just so that the person couldn't contact the police. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis, and we'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Nell Gaither, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. We're just doing a wrap-up of news stories that have happened over the last few weeks. Do you want to start, Laura?
Yeah, this is quick. We were just talking about, you know, obviously with the police conference that you went to, mentioning, you know, Jeffers' comments that he's made about ISIS compared to the bathroom issue. So here's the latest what's going on in North Carolina with the HB2 bill that's been such a controversy. You know, Michael Jordan has said that he had threatened to move the team. Well, and then there was calls from Charles Barkley to move next year's NBA All-Star game, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, said in a press conference just this past week that they are giving North Carolina to the end of this summer to either repeal the bill or change it or something, or they are moving out. That is huge. That's coming straight from the commissioner.
They're moving out what?
They're moving
just the All-Star game?
The All-Star game, which is scheduled to be in North Carolina in 2017.
One thing that they've suspended, or that's the NCAA I'm thinking of, has suspended all meetings in North Carolina already. They haven't moved any games yet, but suspending meetings, that's revenue.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
sure
if
is.
This happens, that is huge. That's like...
So did you
this
hear?
This is almost equivalent to the Super Bowl in terms of the level of importance in that league of sports. So that's never happened before that a sporting event was moved out of a city because of a discriminatory law. So that's huge. If
now, did you
there
hear what the governor
threat?
Right.
Yeah.
You hear what the governor said as a result. He said he's calling on the attorney general who's running against him in the general election for governor to resign.
But because he signed a
discriminatory
bill.
He's the one who signed it.
Mm-hmm.
But you want the other
your
guy
point
to...
is
that's the way they think, you know.
Well,
oh
it's what he's accusing him of is not defending the law, because he said there's no defense, and when there's no defense and you're the attorney on that side saying there's no defense, you know, let's say a court case went to court and you're the prosecutor and you think the defendant is not guilty. What do? You move for dismissal, right? Yeah, so same thing. That's what he thinks. We should move for dismissal of the whole law. So, so he called for that. Patty, Secretary of the Army, what's going on there?
Yes, this has been dragging through the Senate for quite some time. You know, they have the... the duty to confirm nominations from the president. And Eric Fanning, who...
unless you're a Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah, unless you're a Supreme Court nominee, exactly. and you're a president in your last,
exactly.
last year
exactly.
of your full four-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Fanning had been up for nominated by the president to be Secretary of the Army, and is the first openly gay nominee for that position, and he was confirmed. It's finally
awesome.
Finally confirmed.
That's awesome.
And so we have our first openly gay Secretary of U.S. Secretary of the Army.
Mm-hmm. Another one for the history books.
Yep.
That really is. I got a picture sent to me this week from this from the Navy Public Information Office, and that was Navy officers celebrating Gay Pride Month and cutting a big pride cake. I mean, the cake was like as big as this board is here, and it was just, wow, times have changed.
Times have really changed.
I remember a couple of years ago, the Navy regularly sends out, and actually it's the armed forces that send these out, different branches. If you, you know, it's Memorial Day, it's Veterans Day, it's this day, it's that day, would you like to interview an Army officer, an Air Force, whatever, you know, pilot, a Navy, whatever, would you like to interview them for your Veterans Day coverage? And so I wrote back one time and I said, well, we're an LGBT paper, and if you have any openly gay or lesbian service people, and I'm not trying to get into that because they can still be kicked out. But I would love to interview them. And they wrote back and said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I said, no. I want to continue receiving these. Thank you for sending them to me. But if you happen to know of one who's openly gay, let me know. And they never have. But I'd love to, because, you know.
Well, and I think it's important, though, to point out that we don't have protections in the military. Nobody does.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Pursue was repealed, repealing a punishment is not the same as instituting a protection. There is no protection by law of LGBT people in the military. There is under Obama, under President Obama. I think that's the message. But
have
no
you
protection.
So when he leaves office,
things could change under a future president. But have you heard of any complaints by military personnel that they've been discriminated against?
No, I haven't.
And I haven't either.
I'm just saying if it were a different president and maybe even a different party, mm-hmm. There would be – technically there are no protections on the books.
Right.
You know, from this Navy picture, you know what I got from it? These people are just celebrating who they are. They do this kind of thing all the time for – celebrating all kinds of different stuff.
All kinds.
And, you know, different groups of different whatever. And here's a group. All these people are in this picture and proudly in this picture. And you know why they feel safe to show their faces in this picture when just a few years ago, don't ask, don't tell? Because the policy is these are people who are all doing their jobs. They're all doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And the Navy is proud of them for the work they're doing, period. And that's the way it should be.
It is the way it should be. And I think in all the branches today, the president has made clear, and it's coming as truth for individuals in those armed forces, that they can be out in who they are and not fear getting kicked out of the Army or get kicked out
right.
of the Navy.
In truth, you know why they send these pictures out to papers and offer interviews with some of the personnel is it's a great recruiting tool. They don't have to pay for it.
Sure, it's
you know, I'm writing the story. You're not paying to get an ad in the paper. And I'm writing the story of here's this lesbian who's doing a great job, enjoying her job, getting education, you know, set for you know, planning the rest of her life. Either after 4 years, will go out as a
mm-hmm.
or maybe 20 years that she's planning on being in and then retire from the armed forces. And it's a great recruiting tool.
You know,
did you ever think you'd see that?
No. You know, I'm just sitting there thinking back before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Pursue was repealed, one of the biggest arguments was kind of similar to the argument that we have today about the restrooms. What were they? They were about showers.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
It's such a stink about showers, now that it's been repealed, have we heard one complaint about it? Not a one.
Well, because the way most barracks are set up, not in a war zone, but on bases, they have private showers.
They do. They do.
So what's the big deal?
That's what we were saying back
then. Private
shower. Yeah. Same thing with the bathroom issue, especially in a woman's restroom. They're individual stalls. What's the problem?
Do you know what occurred to me when I saw Eric Fanning was appointed and approved? Do you know what position we haven't had a gay, a lesbian cabinet member?
Not openly.
Openly, and I'm talking about openly
right.
gay. Yeah, that's the next. That's the next step. That'll be up to Hillary or Donald to appoint. So
right. Another quick thing that happened this week was that the Veterans Administration has proposed a rule to lift the ban on gender reassignment surgery for veterans.
Mm-hmm. For veterans, yeah.
Veterans.
So veterans hospitals may start pioneering some
gender reassignments. Procedures.
So I didn't know that there was a ban on that. A ban that it'll be that they'll pay for it, or that they could get it done at all.
Both.
Really?
Well, that they could get it done at a VA facility.
Oh, okay.
You can pay for it yourself, but VA benefits allow you to basically get free medical care,
right.
depending upon your service and whatever else.
Right.
But this will allow that. A bill did not pass the House. Was it last week or was it the end of the week before? It was an appropriations bill. It had LGBT protections in it. Part of the problem was enough Democrats didn't vote for it. There were a number who voted against. But it was mostly Republicans who voted against this.
But they had their votes before.
Mm-hmm.
And then word went down, I think, from Paul Ryan's office to change that, because they had closed the vote and there were enough votes for it to pass, and then they opened the vote again, and I think it was five Republicans changed their votes to vote against it, which of course changed the outcome. That was kind of handy.
Well, what was the bill? What was it about?
It was to provide protections for LGBT people, I believe, in the workplace.
Oh.
And in a limited workplace. I don't remember what the bill appropriated.
Okay. It was a spending bill. I think it was a I'm not going to say what it was. It was a spending bill that was attached to. So
and that was pretty crappy, because that doesn't usually happen. If you close a vote, voting is completed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the vote. You don't say, oh, let's just extend it another few minutes and then have a whole bunch of people by design run in and change their votes. That's not the norm.
Well, they can change their votes, but they have to do it before the voting is closed.
And thankfully, we have C-SPAN, because a lot of this was
yeah.
And by the way, this week on June 2nd, 1986 was the first time that C-SPAN broadcast the United States Senate. So happy 30 years, C-SPAN. Another nonprofit service, out there doing good.
What else do we have as far as news over the last week? There was a let me see if I can find it. It is Pride Month. We could mention that.
It is Pride Month.
Most Pride here in Texas takes place after Pride Month, but Houston Pride is June 25th. There's going to be that night also, Saturday night, that night, Queer Bomb is going on here in Dallas, which is kind of the new answer to, we know we have the parade in September, but it's Pride Month, let's do something here in Dallas. And they have their biggest event planned yet. It's going to be over in Deep Ellum. They're going to do a march, not a parade. Marches take a much less expensive permit to do, and everybody participates in it. It's not like you create floats and people watch from the sidelines. Everybody marches. So they're planning a march and hoping that hundreds of people will participate in that. They're having a dance. They're having open mics, and there are several places in Deep Ellum that are participating, and it should be a lot of fun.
And we're coming up on our one-year anniversary. What? Is it this week?
No,
First week of August.
Oh, first week of August of what?
Our anniversary.
No. I was going to say we were coming up on a one-year anniversary of marriage equality.
Oh, yes.
And that's the 25th.
Yeah.
But I think this is the first year we have a challenge 26th, in our community to maybe change our Pride celebrations here in Dallas. to the 26th, because, you know, if you look back at Lawrence v. Texas, which was the defeat of Section 2106, the mm-hmm. homosexual conduct law in Texas specifically, mm-hmm. by the United States Supreme Court, was done on June 26, 2003. Mm-hmm. Then we have on June 26, 2013, U.S. United States versus Windsor. And then we have on June 26, 2015, you know, Obergefell v. Hodges. And so all three of the modern history cases before the United States Supreme Court gave its positive ruling for our community. In fact, the best ruling they could have given on each of those cases.
In June.
June 26th. Yeah. That's our trifecta.
Yeah.
And you know, the main reason not to do it on the 26th is because Houston does theirs, and Houston's is huge. Last year, Houston attracted between 500,000 and 700,000 people. Dallas gets about 50,000 to ours, but that's probably because it's in September.
Yeah.
So we'd have to move it back to June, maybe the week before, so that we're not conflicting, but it needs to be put together by an independent group. The Pride Parade that we do right now, that's a commercial group that wants to do it then. They have no interest in changing, so if people want to get together and change it, an individual group needs to do it.
Razzle Dazzle used to be that great celebration in June.
Yeah.
And it's
that's
coming
gone
on
away.
And coming
yeah.
on. And,
yeah,
you know.
That's gone away again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. I'm getting married on Thursday, so I won't be here next week. Buster Spiller's our guest. Patty and LaRon will be here with him.
And you're going to be on your honeymoon?
I will be on my honeymoon.
Where are you going?
We're just staying. I have relatives and friends who are coming in, and we're going to spend some time together.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. You know, David Taffet getting mm-hmm. married.
I know. That's a day I never thought I'd see.
Did you see
the
congressional proclamation I got this week?
I love what you pull. Well, first, tell everybody what you got.
Eddie Bernice Johnson, who's been a guest on our show mm-hmm. a number of times, mm-hmm. Representative Johnson sent me a kind of a proclamation congratulations letter,
right.
which was that was just so sweet and thoughtful.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was.
Yeah. And, so people from her office will be there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And David Putt typed underneath, "They always say to take an act of Congress to get me married."
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, oh, my God, that is true.
Uh-huh. So I got the act of Congress, and we're getting married on Thursday night at the Turtle Creek Chorale concert. I'm going to put in a plug for the concert. I love the Turtle Creek Chorale. They have been, since Sean came in as the new artistic director, the quality has just gone back up to when Tim was here. And they're creative events, they're fun events, the chorale is just great. And I'm so honored that 175 of them or so are going to be singing at my wedding.
And so dressed up for it.
And they will be dressed up for my
tuxedos.
Wedding. So, and I'll be in a tuxedo, and so will Brian.
Well, see, right there, that's worth it. Because we got a glimpse of it at Black Tie when you got your Kukling Award.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, you know, you want to see David in a tux. Live and in person.
Live and in person. I will be there with my aunt walking me across the stage under the chuppah, because we're getting married under a Jewish wedding canopy, and breaking the glass. And Brian's family is going to be a little bit freaked out. We're almost out of time. And
what should we say when you like?
It's Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And when we break the glass, it is Mazel Tov.